He's banned me for comment on his website, his blog rather. And the reason was that he used to say things like, you know, the IRA fighter, Bobby Sands. So I said to him, you know, you've coined a phrase there, Professor Coyne. Nobody calls the IRA fighters. They're terrorists. And he did like that, being pulled up a bit. He also, when he used the Marx phrase, it was always a religion was the opium of the masses and so on. And I pointed out to him that that's not Karl Marx. I said, Karl Marx, very rarely have ever used the term masses. I said, that's Lenin speak and so on. So he banned me for those things. So I couldn't reply to his question. But the point is, so he's been an atheist. He's got rid of superstition for 40 or 45 years. And he asked the question on his website, is there any economic alternative to capitalism? As if he knew nothing about it, as if he'd never opened a book on economics or politics or history. And so this would be my bugbear to sort of answer Paddy there. You would like to think that they would use it as a stepping stone to socialism, but they never do.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. I'll get Paddy to come back in at a later stage if he wants to. I recognise Nick. Would you like to come in, please, Nick?
Hi, can you hear me okay? You hear me? Hello?
A bit distant, but okay.
All right, I've done with it. Is that any better?
Yeah, that's slightly better.
Right. Well, that's disappointing. I was quite disappointed in the diatribe from Nigel. I mean, first of all, I think I disagreed with almost every single thing that he said. I think he's mixing politics and religion. I personally I'm well acquainted with the authors he mentioned. It was interesting. He just decided to talk about three authors. I mean, they don't represent the new atheism or atheism as an ideology. It goes back to the 16th century. The other thing was, it just seemed to me to be very much a personal attack against particular individuals. I mean, this wasn't a reasoned, dispassionate argument at all. I get the impression that there was even some, I would dare say, some unionist background to some of the views that Nigel was expressing here. The other thing was, I can't believe that, you know, we're supposed to go for about 20 minutes and this went on for 45 minutes, the diatribe. I just find that that's sort of playing on people's, you know, the rules, if you like, or I just couldn't believe that. The evidence as well. I mean, I think Nigel's getting confused between, you know, the arguments from Dawkins and Rich and Harris and Daniel Dennett and Victor Stenger. The list is endless. It's all about the difference between faith, belief, without any evidence. I mean, that's always been their argument. You know, to start, you know, confusing it with their political beliefs just clouds the issue. It denigrates the whole argument.
Right, Nick. Can I ask Nigel to come back to you on that? Could I just get you to mute and I'll ask Nigel to come back in, please?
Okay, first of all, I think it was anything but a diatribe. I think I gave some pretty good evidences of what I was claiming. Would the last speaker preferred if I had came on and, said with the new atheists in order to attack religion? I mean, what would the point of that been? I mean, I could sit here all night talking about the Kalam cosmological argument of William Lane Craig. I could talk about the Pascal's wager or Occam's razor. I could talk about the Euthyphro problem. I could talk about Epicurus and so on. Is God powerful and good, and so why does evil exist, and so on and so forth? I mean, all these arguments, I can name those arguments for you. Give me 10 minutes, I'll write you 30 of them out, and I'll give you the reply to them as well. William Lane Craig, for example, is a famous Christian apologist. He's basically the champion of the Christian religion. And he has said numerous times that, you know, he's been doing this for 50 years. And he's been saying the same five things for 50 years. He's been giving the argument from First Cause, and his speciality on that is the Kalam cosmological argument. Whatever begins to exist has to have a cause, and so on and so forth. The universe had a cause, therefore the universe the universe began, therefore the universe has a cause, and the cause has to be outside of itself because it was outside of time and space, and that can only be a God, and so on and so forth. The answer would be, of course, that it was 14 billion years ago and all this kind of stuff, right? I know all those arguments. Craig's the fine-tuning of the universe is the second one. His big third one is the supposed historicity of Jesus. His fourth one is the supposed existence of objective morality. The fifth one is the argument from personal experience, and so on and so forth. I mean, what did the last speaker expect me to do? Did he expect me to come on and start giving party members that old spiel? Craig's been doing it for 50 years. He's been wiping the floor with the atheists for 50 years. Even when he debated Horace, it's debatable, to use a pun, whether Horace even impinged on him at all. And he debated Christopher Hitchens, and you know, it's generally believed that Hitchens was a joke in the debate, and again that Craig wiped the floor with him. Craig never wipes the floor with anybody, as far as I'm concerned, because I know the arguments and I know the answers. I don't need him to tell me and the bullshit. But you know, you're such a big fan of Richard Dawkins and so on. Well, here's a situation that I'd like to hear your opinion of, since I shouldn't have been should have carried out my diatribe against him. Mentioned Craig there. Well, Craig has issued a challenge to Richard Dawkins numerous times. Craig's from America, came to England, and he challenged Dawkins to a debate, and Dawkins ran away from him. Now, I happen to think that Dawkins was right. He shouldn't. He's under no obligation whatsoever to debate that Craig. That Craig is as loathsome and as odious as that Michael Shermer. And Dawkins is under no obligation whatsoever to debate him on any question. The point is, well, very quickly, the reason why Dawkins says he won't debate him is because Craig holds this view that when the Israelites went into the Amalekites and murdered them all and killed all their babies and the women and children and so on, Craig defends that because he's a Christian apologist, of course. He defends that on the grounds that God told them to do it. And therefore, we should actually feel sorry for the Israelites, because imagine being told to do that, go in and cut little babies' heads off and so on. Craig says, and if you're like me and you believe that babies go straight to heaven, well, what's the big deal? Well, Dawkins was absolutely outraged at that. And you know, I'm not especially outraged at it. I would just like to know why we shouldn't go out and kill all the babies so they go straight to heaven. But anyway, so Dawkins was outraged at that, and there's no way he would be on the same platform as someone who holds that view as William Lane Craig, right? About a year later, he appears on a show on the God Channel, a clown called Condor. I forget his first name, actually. Condor, I think he used to be a pop star or something, then he got Jesus or something. But Dawkins sits down with him and has a big conflab with him and all. And that guy, Condor, has exactly the same views as Craig. I would hold exactly the same views in regard to the Israelites killing all the babies and so on. No difference whatsoever in his defence of all that horror that Dawkins is outraged that Craig promotes and so on. Horror Condor, he has exactly the same views as Craig. The only difference between Craig and him is he's a fucking moron and Craig isn't. So about that, for example. They were talking, sitting down with them for over an hour, having a wonderful discussion. So, you know, ask a question about that of your hero. And incidentally, I'll tell you one I didn't mention. Lawrence Krauss. Lawrence Krauss is a physicist. He's become famous and probably rich because of the new atheism and so on. He hits his wagon to that whole train. And where's Lawrence Krauss now? Well, he's still a big friend of Richard Dawkins. Richard Dawkins and Lawrence Krauss are like bosom buddies. They've done a tour around America together and all. Well, what did Lawrence Krauss do in regard to the Jeffrey Epstein thing? Lawrence Krauss was a big friend of Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein's the one who used his billions that he stole through from the working class through the stock market and so on. The surplus value that he accumulated over the years, the billions, he used all that surplus value to traffic young women, young girls, and that Lawrence Krauss actually defended it. He said, he's an atheist, and so he's on a stepping stone to socialism. He defended that. He says, if these young girls want to sell their bodies for money, well, that's up to them. It's up to them whether or not they use their bodies to get money of Jeffrey Epstein. And I wouldn't moralize about that and so on. And of course, it was discovered that Epstein was a paedophile, trafficking young girls and so on and so forth. And of course, as we all know, he ended up in jail and he hanged himself and so on. Now, Lawrence Krauss, incidentally, has been suspended from his universities now for attacking young girls. That's common knowledge all over the place and so on. And these are the people you're defending.
I'm not too sure that Nick was defending that sort of action. And I didn't hear him talk about Dawkins as a hero or anything like that. So I'll let you come back in a little later.
Could I respond to that?
Okay, Nick.
I've just listened to these endless straw man arguments that Nigel's just plucking out of the air. It just goes on and on. I mean, this isn't debate. This is a joke. You know, I'm speechless. I really am.
Okay, we're not that, Nick. All right.
Do you want me to reply to that? Sure. I'll just say very quickly, well, let's hear your arguments then. I haven't heard you saying anything. All you've done is denigrate what I said, but you haven't actually said anything yourself. I ask you, did you want me to come on and start talking about the Euthyphro problem or the Epicurus situation or talk about eschatology or something like that?
Yeah, you're just inventing these arguments. They're strawman arguments. It's a pathetic way to debate.
Can I just ask? I'm going to take another contribution for the minute. I will let you back in, Nick. Don't worry about that. We're not type of chairman. I'll take the contribution from Mike Foster, please. Mike, can you unmute yourself? Oh, you have done, sorry.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know enough about what Nigel was saying just now to sort of comment on that at all. I didn't really sort of follow that. I'd like to stick up for the God Delusion. It's one of my favourite books, and I'll give some reasons why. I think maybe to sort of counter what Nigel was alleging about shallowness. When Dawkins wrote it, he was professor for the public understanding of science at Oxford University. So I'm guessing that he was, you know, with his public understanding hat on, he was trying to pitch the book at a very accessible, readable level. And I think it succeeds at that. It's very clearly written and it sort of covers the basics, you know, the arguments for the existence of a God, arguments against, the implications on morality, a bit of anthropology in there. And yeah, he doesn't touch politics. But I don't think he needs to. You know, I think his arguments happily run alongside.
Mike, I've lost you. I don't know whether anybody else can hear you, but I've lost you.
Oh,
can you?
I heard you then. Can you hear me now?
Better, thank you.
Yeah. Oh.
Can I just do a very, very quick intervention there, Was that Meg speaking? I think it was. Meg, you says that he doesn't deal with politics in the God Delusion. Oh, does he not? I was under the impression he described Stalin as a Marxist. I was under the impression that Stalin did all his evil, did all his evils, not in the name of atheism. He done them all in the name of Marxism. That's politics.
Oh, hang on. Let's refresh my memory. I've got a copy in front of me. Stalin's got five mentions in the index. I can't remember the bits you're referring to. To be honest, fair point. If that's what he says, I mean, but not with that. Notwithstanding, I think, you know, the bulk of the book isn't sort of political with a capital P, and sort of stands up regardless of any remarks he made about Stalin. I think he. You also sort of criticised the book on that tendency, maybe not that book specifically, on the grounds that it was presenting nothing new. But again, it doesn't need to. It's sort of summarising a bulk of arguments which, is sort of common knowledge, has been around for a while. So in that sense, you know, the book's an introduction. And I think that's all it needs to be. And it's, especially if it was aimed at popularizing an ideology, you know, then it does have to be written sort of simply and clearly. And then if someone wants to dig into it deeper, they can, you know, sort of research it on their own. So, they're my reasons for thinking The God Delusion's a good book. Not the good book, a good book. Thank you.
Did you want to say something on that then, Nigel?
Was that to me?
Yeah.
I actually agree with a lot of praise for Dawkins in a lot of ways. I just think that socialists should be more critical of these people. You know, for example, Richard Dawkins was on a show along with Tony Benn one time, and Tony Benn was saying to him about there's a lot of good Christians and a lot of people who carry a good work are Christians and so on and so forth. So he was sort of misunderstanding what Dawkins was saying. And then someone was mentioned about Hitler and, this thing about Hitler being an atheist and being a Darwinist and so on and so forth. I agree with all that. That's a lot of nonsense. But what does Dawkins do in response to that? And I think it was in that program. He pulls out from his pocket a list of quotes from Adolf Hitler to show that Hitler, in fact, was a believer in God and Jesus, and quotes from Mein Kampf and all those quotes about Christ from the Mein Kampf and so on. So he sits there and quotes them all to show that Hitler was a believer and he wasn't an atheist. But he doesn't do the same thing in regard to Marx. He wouldn't dream of doing the same thing to defend the honour of Marx, for example. He's sitting there saying that Stalin was a Marxist. He would say that the so-called Soviet Union was a Marxist state. And in other words, he would say all of the things that we absolutely oppose in regard to that. He doesn't put out any quotations to back up his claim that Stalin was a Marxist, that the so-called Soviet Union was a Marxist state and a communist country and all this. He doesn't put out any quotations to prove that that's either true or not, to back up himself, or, you know, if he was interested in the truth, obviously he would know, for example, our criticisms of the so-called Soviet Union and the criticisms of Karl Kautsky and the criticisms of Martov and the criticisms of Plekhanov and Axelrod and so on. So why doesn't he pull out all these quotations from these people that the way he does in regard to Hitler and so on? And I'll say it again. You can read that God Delusion, and there is some good stuff in it. I wouldn't deny it. But there's also a lot of terrible stuff in it. And imagine people reading that for the first time. They know nothing about socialism, know nothing about Marxism and so on. And they read that Stalin did all his evil deeds, not in the name of atheism, but in the name of Marxism.
Okay, thank you. Right, well, I was going to invite Nick, but I see that he's... I was going to invite Nick back in. And I still am. So if you want to have a go, Nick, over to you, sir.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping other people will come in because
you know, Nigel's just been a commandeer of this discussion again and have these endless straw man arguments between himself, which makes it almost impossible to respond to because they're just lined up one after the other. You know, I don't want to hog the mic, and it's a pity he doesn't take that same attitude.
Okay, then next. Okay. Okay, then
I'd like to have one quote. I mean, you know,
okay.
I've only had 3 minutes compared to Nigel's an hour. Yeah, one of the earliest proponents of atheism was Baron Dolbach. Nothing can be more contrary to religion and the clergy than reason and common sense. When we examine options of men, we find that nothing is more uncommon than common sense, or in other words, they lack judgments, discover plain truths, or reject absurdities in palpable contradictions. So whilst I accept, you know, there's this label, Four Horsemen, interestingly, he didn't mention Daniel Dennett, who's part of the New Atheist. But, you know, it wasn't really new ideas. As Mike mentioned earlier, they were just reinforcing ideology that's been around since, you know, since ancient times, since the Greeks. So, you know, if we're going to have a discussion, at least, you know, can we make a point and then allow people to pick up on individual points rather than just endlessly go on building these strawman arguments? It's almost impossible to respond to those.
Okay, point taken. Okay, thank you, Nick. Point taken.
Could I just reply to that very quickly?
No. Can you just give us a minute, please, Nigel? I'm sorry. I want to take a contribution from Richard.
Sure.
Okay. Richard, please.
Oh, okay. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Sometimes I'm not. I don't come through on this. Okay. New atheism. I don't really care what the personal opinions, political opinions, personal quirks of Lawrence Krauss or Richard Dawkins or Sam Harris or any of this crowd really are. What I'm interested in is the new atheism as a movement. These people are not the movement. They don't represent the movement. They're spokesmen for certain aspects of the movement, but there are thousands and thousands of people, particularly in the USA, who are calling themselves New Atheists. And the New Atheist movement was originally a movement which said, okay, look, there have been atheists around for a long time, but our general attitude has been that we will defer to the religion. We will not criticize religion. We will treat religion with respect, and we will just sit in the corner and we will actually sort of say, yes, we're atheists, and we'll get on with our lives as atheists. The new atheist came in with a new attitude that religion should be challenged. It was completely new. It was you had one or two in the past, but it was a completely new attitude. And if you look, for example, in the United States, religion there is a really, really significant ideological force. It's an ideological force which actually brainwashes people from a very early age. And the new atheists were coming in to challenge this. And they've now, in America, there are hundreds of them. There are bloggers, there are people on YouTube, atheists, making the point, or making 101 points, against religion, debating with people like William Lane Craig, with Matt Slick, with Ken Ham, and all these people who are trying to promote religion. When somebody becomes an atheist in the United States, what they actually describe themselves as doing is coming out, because this is a major life-changing move for a lot of people in the United States. To come out as an atheist could mean the destruction of your entire life. It could mean the loss of your family. It could at least mean the loss of your wife or husband, your children, your community, your status in your community. You could be a complete pariah by coming out as an atheist in large parts of the United States. the evangelical Southern Baptist communities down there in the South in particular have a huge controlling power over people's minds. And that's really significant, yeah, in terms of allowing them to actually think for themselves and to experience the world in which they actually live, not the world in which their pastors tell them that they live. And the new atheists in America, what they're doing at the moment is they're setting up organizations all over the place. So people, there's one, for example, called Recovering from Religion. It's helping atheists get through all these terrible things that can happen to them if they come out. And it's helping people who are ditching religion, because that can be equally traumatic. People who leave religion, especially sort of a number of these Southern religious cults and sects, can go into deep depression, can go into all kinds of mental problems simply by leaving religion in the United States, because it's so all-encompassing. It's so all-encompassing that they've never had to think for themselves. They've never had to establish their own values. They've never had to find their way through life. And to come away from religion is hugely traumatic for people. And all of this, the new atheists are actually working on and getting together to kind of support. And no, why should we expect people like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris to be socialists when so few of the population actually are? To complain that these people are not socialists is really to make a non-point. No, of course they're not socialists. You wouldn't expect them to be. But what they are doing is that they are challenging an ideology which actually keeps people really tied down in how they can think about the world. And so I think that's a good thing. So I would support that. They're not socialists. I don't even think they're fellow travellers, but they are doing something which is creating a movement in the world, which is allowing some people at least to actually start to think about the world in different terms. And although, you know, no, of course, people who are atheists don't actually come out as socialists immediately. But there is a tendency for them, a very strong tendency for atheists to come out on the sort of liberal or social democratic side of politics. So at least they're thinking about community issues. At least they're thinking about, you know, sort of what they value, which is something. It's at least a release from religion. So I don't identify with the new atheist movement, but I do feel that they are doing something that we could at least give some tentative support to. Not political support, but in terms of a movement that destroys ideologies which actually prevent people thinking for themselves. Cheers.
Okay, thank you, Richard. Did you want to say something about that, Nigel? Or can we take someone another contribution?
I'm happy to let other people speak. What I'll say very quickly is the whole thing about what the speaker previous to that said, you know, the four horsemen of the new atheism, Daniel Dennett and so on. It's laughable. It's risible. Did you hear them speaking in Hitchens' front room, the apartment he bought in Washington, with the proceeds of God Is Not Great, and so on? Complete nonsense. Complete and utter tripe. Daniel Dennett, I always called him the 3.5 horsemen, because Daniel Dennett was never part of that. In fact, the previous speaker mentioned someone who should have been, Victor Stenger, was a far better candidate. Daniel Dennett always suffered from Stockholm syndrome. He's there, but he had to take on their shoes and so on because he was there. In regard to the last speaker there, I've heard all that a million times from Richard Dawkins himself. I don't agree with a word of it.
Well, I agree with everything Howard said. There you go.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to take Comrade. Howard, can you go ahead, please?
Well, I've got a similar thing to say to Richard, I'm afraid, I'll be brief. I mean, an important part of our case is that we're materialists. We reject religion as irrational, non-materialist, delusional. And if there are other people who support that, we should applaud them, I think, rather than damn them. I mean, if they're not socialists, they're not socialists. Okay, it would be better if they were. But it's in our favour that they, you know, that they express these views and that these views on religion spread. It's at least one illusion less among workers. So I have to agree with Nick and with Mike and with Richard on this, that we need to make some kind of distinction, not between religion and politics, but between the idea that, you know, people who are atheists and write books and express views against religion, they are in one sense anyway on our side, even if they're not socialists.
Okay, thank you, Howard. I'm going to take Vincent next, please, Vin.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I once went to a Christian men's breakfast. I mean, basically, I'll go anywhere for bacon and eggs. And it was this bloke coming to talk about how Dawkins and people were wrong and how, you know, there is a God and everything. And it struck me that actually it's a nice little sort of like nice little number for your Dawkins types and for your religion. I mean, they're all preaching to the converted and they're all getting a bit of money to sort of like go and talk. And, you know, at the same time, I wasn't that impressed by Dawkins. There's nothing that, I sort of probably skimmed, God, he's not great, and the selfish gene and stuff. But there's nothing there that I haven't read in David Hume or Bertrand Russell. I mean, if you want arguments for atheism, those are the places to go. In terms of what Howard was it who was saying about they're on our side. I mean, Dawkins is pretty out and out. Right-wing tosser. I mean, he's involved in starting a private university. He's more of a sort of like bête noire for the Christians. And I'm not sure that there's an enormous amount of people that have been convinced, you know, started off as believing in God, read one of his books and went, oh, right, it's right. I must stop doing this. Okay, that's enough from me.
Right, thanks, Vin. I'm going to take Kevin next.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
So, kind of like Hud, or was it Richard? Is Hud Richard?
Yeah,
that's me.
All right, okay. So kind of like Hud, sorry, Richard and Howard. You know, I kind of felt that back in that sort of mid-2000s time, when there was a resurgence in the interest in atheism, I wasn't personally that interested in the politics of the authors of these books and the popularity. I was more interested in getting the popularity of a pushback against religion affecting our lives through, you know, especially in politics, and where religious beliefs within politicians colour their decisions about things like women's reproductive rights. And we just saw, you know, Richard was talking earlier there, I think it was Richard or Howard, was talking about the massive influence of the those fundamentalist Christian groups in the South. And those band of states are the states that have recently, and also interestingly enough, all men as well, but probably all members of these churches have curtailed seriously the rights of women to go and get abortions and control their own lives, their sexual reproduction rights. And that's why attracted me to the I mean, I was an atheist, prior to this, but I was pleased that Dawkins and Hitchens and and others were getting airtime and television time and radio time to speak about these issues, and also talking about the the other angles, which is about critical thinking and the supporting of the sciences, empirical evidence, skepticism. These are massively important things, which whether you love them or hate them, Dawkins and all that crew, I felt it was about the right time for the, yes, and they were books that you found in Tesco's and not the academic bookshop and stuff like that, but they were accessible pieces of material, possibly with some inaccuracies about politics, but hopefully people would have picked them. Obviously people did buy these books in their droves. And I think hopefully some people would have questioned their belief in the idea of an invisible man in the sky or whatever, or the spaghetti teapot monster. I generally think these guys were a reasonable force for good. And especially at the time, during that time, the Blair government were trying to push and sanctioning the pushing of intelligent design and creationism as part of the curriculum, as an equivalent alternative scientific idea. And I think these guys came along just about the right time to kind of reasonably put the kibosh on that in British schools. So whatever Nigel says about them, whatever personal vendetta he has against these people, I generally think they were a force for good, and I applaud what they did during that time. And that's my 2 cents. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, comrade. So, do you want to come back on that, Nigel? I think we've rather played out the idea that they're atheists but not socialists. So I think we've played that tonight. Do you want to Kevin or
can't hear you?
Sorry, Joel said he can't hear me.
I can hear you now.
All right, my apologies. I'll just repeat what I said. Nigel, I think we've played out the idea that these people are atheists, but they're not socialists. So I think if we can leave that to one side for the time being. Can we, did you want to respond to anything that's been said just recently? Or do you want me to, can I take another?
Just that I've lost the will to live.
Okay. Well, I'll take Joel Thompson.
What I was going to say would have been on the lines of the not being socialist. So I'd be playing that point out even further to speak about it. So maybe you should go to somebody else then.
Right, okay. I'll take Howard again then.
Oh, it's just a point of fact, really, regarding something that Vin said. Dawkins didn't start a private university. You're thinking of another well-known atheist, A.C. Grayling. He was the one who opened a private university. That's all.
Could I just make a quick point on that? With the help and connivance of Richard Dawkins was absolutely up A.C. Grayling's backside in relation to the university that he started at 30 grand a year and so on. Dawkins is the worst elitist going.
Actually, I don't mind if they did open a private university. It's nothing to do with socialism, whether they're in a private or a state university.
Okay. Thanks, Howard. Paddy?
Well, I was only going to make a trivial point that, as far as I can work out from the things that Dawkins says, and I've read probably three quarters of his books, I reckon. He's, if anything, he's kind of a soft left. I think he'd be sort of liberal lefty. Probably a late, I'm fairly sure he's a Labour voter. I mean, this is a trivial point. But I really like Dawkins. I'm a Dawkins fan. But I was also a Gould fan, Stephen Jay Gould fan. I loved him. Gould was very far left. He was much more along our lines. He wouldn't have been, you know, a socialist, like, as we understand it. But he's very far left. And they, the two of them, I like both of them. And they hated each other with a vengeance. And but they never argued about politics, which is interesting. They tore lumps out of each other over evolution and also over religion, but they never really touched on politics. And Dennett took huge delight in chewing bits out of Gould. Never mentioned politics again. I don't think politics was really a divisive influence in these people's views. They were, you know, soft left, I think, is how you mostly describe them.
Could I reply to that? Very quickly,
you please do.
In regard to Dawkins's politics, he always boasts about voting on the left, and then when you look at who he actually votes for, he votes for the Lib Dems, and he specifically voted for a Lib Dem in his constituency because the guy was an atheist. He also turned out to be a crook, but that's another matter. Anyway, his politics are atrocious. His politics are the stupidest load of nonsense. And the whole point that I was trying to make earlier on was to look up to this guy in terms of arguments against religion is one thing. And incidentally, he's brilliant on Darwin and Darwinism. I listened, believe it or not, I listened to Richard Dawkins going to sleep at night. I've been listening to his book, the one from 2010, or I think it was. No, it was after that. I forget what you call it. Anyway, I mean, he says in that book, you know, something like, you know, some people would say that the money should be taken off the rich, but I am not a communist and I am not an anarchist, but I suppose you could see something in that and this sort of thing. That's Richard Dawkins' Outgrown God, I think it's called. I listen to his stuff all the time. I think he's brilliant at opposing religion, but his politics are as dumb as anything. And the point is, of course, when he says things about politics, for example, that Stalin did all the stuff in the name of Marxism, well, the people who think he's brilliant too, like apparently everybody in the party thinks he's brilliant, including me, in certain ways. But all I'm saying is that his politics are atrocious. And people who think he's so brilliant and people outside the party and so on who know nothing about the party, know nothing about socialism and so on and so forth, know nothing about the history of it and so on, they believe him. Because they believe him in everything else. But his politics are absolutely, absolutely atrocious. Stephen Jay Gould, of course, was someone that we would have a lot of sympathy with. Dick Lewontin, for example. Dick Lewontin was an out-and-out Marxist. And there's a lot of history of good people in science and so on. But Richard Dawkins isn't one of them in terms of politics, and certainly not from our point of view. I mean, these people are right-wing ideologists. That gets Sam Harris. That Sam Harris is one step away from being a fascist. For anybody to come on here and support that Sam Harris, I mean, seriously.
Steve, sorry about this, but look, Joel's got a really nice kitchen, but I'm sort of seeing all the details.
Oh, Joel, would you switch your video off?
Okay.
Right, thank you. Right, I'll take contribution from Red Buick. I think you've forgotten to unmute yourself.
Sorry, I thought Paddy was next. But anyway, yeah, I've never forgiven Dawkins for his scientific book, so called the Selfish Gene. I know he wasn't arguing that there was a gene for selfishness, but that's how it was taken. And that's how it was used against socialism. But in fact, there's a footnote in that book where he criticizes workers for going on strike because they're selfish. So he's open to criticism both his science and also for his politics. I think you know, Nigel's right. He is a Lib Dem. That's the sort of thing I would think he would be. I don't think he would even support the support the Labour Party. But as I say, nobody's mentioned until now his first attack on socialism, the selfish gene. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Adam. Before I bring you back in, Nigel, can I get Doogie to contribute? Doogie?
Yeah, I think sometimes you get single issues like war or something like that, or bombs, or and religion as well. Really, I know people who are against religion can have all sorts of crazy ideas, and it's not a problem to criticise their politics if their politics are wrong. So I can see people saying, Richard Dawkins has some good ideas about criticising religion and the Bible and all the rest. I mean, I've read a lot of his books. I've even read The Selfish Gene, and I don't think he thinks genes are selfish, really, But I mean, anyway. But I mean, I can sympathise with Nigel at criticising people who might have one idea that we agree with, but lots of ideas that we don't.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Doogie. So, we've got this issue of the aura of scientific validity spreading around to other rather shakier eyes. Okay, I'll take Paddy next.
Yeah, well, just briefly, I've got to spring to the defence of the selfish gene. If anybody thinks that it's a defence of selfishness, and it did come out, it was widely read during the Thatcher years, and it was associated with that sort of pathological selfishness in the popular press. So I'd sort of see where Adam's coming from. It's absolutely not about that. In fact, that title wasn't even his. It was suggested by his publisher, who thought that his original title wouldn't sell. The book is about altruism, and it contains a long exposition of what's called an evolutionary stable strategy, which is a sort of tit-for-tat extrapolation of game theory, which applies all over nature, and would also, I think, be a very workable model of socialism. And all of that is in The Selfish Gene. If anybody here has not read that, or has read it so long ago that they've forgotten what's in it, I really recommend it. It's an absolutely brilliant book.
Okay. Right, Richard, please. Richard, if you'll mute.
Oops, sorry about that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say much the same about The Selfish Gene. It's got nothing to do with selfishness. I mean, he wrote it in order to put the fact that what we observe in nature is altruism very often, and he wanted to put that on a scientific basis. He actually said quite publicly that he regrets calling it the Selfish Gene because of the misunderstanding that has actually been caused as a result. But, really, apart from that, what I wanted to say was, and actually, a lot of that is down to the left. The left took one look at the title and actually decided it was about selfishness, and actually spent a lot of time promoting the idea that it was about selfishness. It wasn't actually anything that was in the book or anything that he was intending. But let me say, I actually loathe Dawkins. He makes my flesh creep, basically, personally. I really dislike him. I think he's very... I suspect he's on the beginnings of the autistic spectrum. That's my... He seems so clueless when he comes to dealing with his with people. But really what I wanted to say was, what does it matter what his politics are if we're discussing new atheism? He's one of a few people who are prominent, and certainly the fact that he has expressed some anti-socialist political views is problematic because he is so popular. But he's only one of a great many people who are actually part of a movement. So to focus on these people and to focus on their politics, I think, is to completely miss the point. I don't think that the new atheists are socialists. I don't actually know why anyone would expect them to be. Why would we expect it? So really, it's a question of ideologies, as far as I'm concerned. It's not a question of their particular politics, and it's not a question of their personal issues, and it's not really a question of who is prominent among them either.
Right, okay. Nigel, you might want to come back in.
Just to let everyone know that I'm here every Friday at 7:30, and everybody wants to tune in.
Okay,
very quickly on the selfish gene.
Okay.
Everybody's right, actually. Dawkins has defended that numerous times, that he didn't mean that human beings are selfish or have selfish genes that makes them selfish. His whole point, of course, was the genes I fear of the world, and it's the gene itself that's selfish and getting itself reproduced and replicated and so on. So I'll give him that. Also, can I say very quickly, he has helped me in one way. When I was a young socialist, I used to defend socialism as being possible. When people say, oh, it's impossible, I used to say, oh, no, it's perfectly possible if there's no property. I used to mention the Pinari Indians and 40,000 years of primitive communism and so on and so forth. Well, only recently there, Richard Dawkins has helped me to look at that in a different way, because he defends the view that when humans used to live in the plains of Africa, they used to live in small groups, and they had to be nice to each other and be altruistic and be cooperative and so on, because they always met people that they would meet again. They would always meet people who they relied on for food and shelter and so on. So they had to be nice to each other. They had to be altruistic. And Dawkins argues that trait is actually inbred in us now, that that's actually implanted in our brain now. And he gives an example. It's the same thing. He says we don't live in small groups anymore. We get our food from across the world and so on. But that whole attitude of altruism and cooperation and so on, that is actually built into the human psyche now. And I must admit, I find that a far better argument than I ever give.
Okay, thanks. So we'll take Adam Buick next.
Yeah, I mean, I've read him twice, and I know perfectly well that it's not an argument that there's a gene for selfishness, but it's the title of book which he accepted, and that idea got spread. But even on the scientific level, he's trying to argue that the gene is the unit of inheritance, and it wants to survive. But it can't explain altruism, and it can't explain homosexuality, and it can't explain the point of women after they can't have children or offspring. I mean, I think it's just wrong. And in fact, every book that he's written since then, he's backtracked on what he argued in that book. There's, he now allows for an extension of genes to things that have come from the environment. I think it's called the extended phenom or something like that. So, I think he was just wrong on his stance. Not that he was a scientist, incidentally, in that particular field. He's basically a popularizer of science, and he's quite good at it when it comes to evolution. But I still think he was wrong in scientifically in that argument about the genes seeking to survive and nothing else.
Okay, thank you. Can invite Richard. Richard, unmute.
Sorry about that. Too eager. I don't think that's true, Adam. Models have been created on the basis of the selfish gene thesis, which can account for all of those things in nature. I mean, there's been a considerable movement in the last 10 years, particularly among feminists, actually. A lot of feminists have actually been engaged in things like evolutionary biology and anthropology, and have been actually giving a whole new slant, looking at these things in an entirely different way. So we've now got sort of grandmother hypothesis. We have an analysis of how homosexuality can exist and thrive, even with the selfish gene theory. So I don't think that's the case. But also, what I'd actually say is that The Selfish Gene as a book did a great deal. I mean, did shove the argument insofar as people were trying to base their politics on the current state of science. The Sabestine did do a great deal to shove biology in the direction of socialism and away from right-wing theories, because the previous dominant theory was functionalism, and functionalism says that each individual contributes in their own way into a harmonious whole. Sorry, excuse me, I've got some stuck in my throat. And was actually used by fascists to support the whole theory of fascism, and it can be used to support the whole theory of state control. So in fact, Dawkins did do something quite useful as far as we're concerned. And as far as I'm concerned, it was the left who actually never read the book but started screaming blue murder that, you know, sort of, this is all about selfishness, that are largely to blame about this and not Dawkins.
Okay. Thank you, Richard. Got Kevin in the queue. Kevin, if you'd like to speak.
Sorry, I'm clicking the wrong microphone button.
Yeah, but everybody does it, mate. Don't
can I just say that I can't remember who it was that said that, you know, Dawkins has been backtracking on some of the things that he wrote in The Selfish Gene, but, you know, I don't think that's a fault. That's how science progresses, and I'd rather that scientists admit they made mistakes along the way based on new evidence, new ideas, and I don't really see that as a you know, a character flaw. And I am about halfway through The Selfish Gene just now. And hope to get it finished in the next week. I just thought I'd like to say that.
Right, okay, thank you. Now, it's 9:30, getting on. I'm quite happy to continue if anybody wants to carry on after. Can I, if the meeting agrees, I'd like to invite Nigel to, if he wants to sum up, to ask him to do so.
I'll not go on for much longer. Could I just say the last speaker there, Kevin, I think it was. I don't want to spoil the book for him, the Selfish Gene, but could I just say to you that it turns out all right in the end. It becomes quite communistic in the end. I also say that I've enjoyed the meeting very much. Not sure others have, listening to me. At least it was a bit lively, and it was certainly interesting, and some of the comments were extremely interesting. I just am slightly appalled that we have people in the party who can, for example, defend someone like Sam Harris and these people. I think we have to watch. You know, it's so easy to fall into this thing of looking up to people and admiring them because of one particular thing. Someone mentioned earlier on there a point that I agree with absolutely. You can admire them for doing a specific thing, for saying a specific thing, or for writing a specific thing, and so on. But that doesn't mean to say you have to, you know, agree with them on everything. I tell you frankly, Richard Dawkins' politics are disgraceful. His whole attitude is completely anti-socialist. I wouldn't listen to a word that Richard Dawkins says on anything, except maybe evolution and Darwinism and so on. In regard to the other people, I mean, you've never seen a collection of... I mean, I try to give some examples there in my talk. For example, the whole thing about the police strike in Montreal. I mean, who on earth in their right mind would still be saying that? And I even pointed out on Dawkins' website that is the most ridiculous and stupid thing I've ever heard in my life. They expect the people of Montreal to do anything other than what happened. Someone said to me on Dawkins' website, oh, Pinker didn't really mean it. I'm telling you, he did mean it. He believed it absolutely. And not only did he believe it absolutely, but I heard Richard Dawkins repeat it about 2 months ago. He said, oh, my colleague Steven Pinker, he told her, I mean, what happened in Montreal was a police strike. And then he gives the same old crap. after having it pointed out to him that's complete nonsense. This is the type of person Richard Dawkins is. He is good at science. I was a big fan in the beginning when he first opened his website and so on. And as I said earlier on, I contributed a good deal to it. And I agree absolutely with a lot of these people on science and on evolution and Darwinism and all the rest of it. But the simple fact is, I would say that their overall effect on people listening to them would be detrimental to our activities. Let me put it that way. And anybody who thinks otherwise, I haven't heard any refutation of anything I said. I mean, I don't know who that guy is, Nick Sunday. You know, to give me a lot of abuse like that, you know, I don't mind. I'm a big boy. I couldn't care less. But the point is, just keep saying that, making accusations and so on. He says, it's hard to deal with this. You know, it's hard to respond. Really? Well, you had about four attempts. You were all laying there for about 15 minutes all in. I never heard you making one attempt to refute anything I said in that. But anyway, that's not the point. I'll just repeat it. Yes, absolutely. I'd defend Richard Dawkins in science and all any day of the week. And I'm interested in the ideas I expressed one that Dawkins gave about the evolution of altruism and cooperation and so on. There's some ideas like that, Sam Harris. I despise him. I think he's a quasi-fascist and so on. And yet I've heard people support him on here. I must say I'm astounded to find that there's so many people in the party who don't mind supporting right-wing ideologues.
Right. Okay. I'm not sure. I actually don't know the person. So I don't any party member having defended Harris, whoever he is. I've just got a query from Kevin. I'll take this as the last query, Kevin.
I don't think anyone explicitly agreed with Sam Harris, because Sam Harris back in the Four Horsemen day, I don't think, I certainly didn't see what Sam Harris is getting up to now. I didn't see that coming. So I would like to disavow any idea that, I'm defending Sam Harris as this neoliberal, right-wing, kind of becoming a Jordan Peterson type. I don't think anyone who's put forward a positive idea about the Four Horsemen, what they were trying to do, was specifically picking out Sam Harris and saying that he's a good guy. I personally have flipped the bozo bit on Sam Harris, but at the time I didn't know anything about his politics. I certainly didn't see what he's up to now coming down the pipe. So that's all I'd like to say.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Right, well, I don't know what to do now, because, I mean, when we hold physical meetings, we can declare the formal meeting that people to stick around. I don't know whether I should do that on this occasion. What do people think? Do you want me to do that? Keep the meeting. Well, but I mean, the thing is that the channel's open anyway for any further discussions that people want to continue. So I don't know. So if people want to stick around, and we can throw some bones at each other, I think. If I could thank the meeting, on the meeting's behalf, if I could thank Nigel for his contribution tonight, and thank you all for attending and for all your contributions.
Thank you, Steve, for sharing quite a challenging discussion.
Yeah, thank you.
And also, thanks to Nigel. I really enjoyed his talk. And, you know, you've got a great accent, Nigel.
He's committed. The lad's committed.
You know, and I do like the passion